So my name is Sue Hanley, and I'm a consultant solving basically people problems as it relates to technology.
And my name is Dan Holm. I'm the director of product marketing for SharePoint at Microsoft.
So you guys are probably thinking, move? No?
No? Is your clicker working? Oh, we're having all kinds of good technical
fun. Yeah, great technical difficulties today. Mark.
Is your little clicker thing installed?
All right.
I'll turn the page.
All right. So you are probably wondering, like you're looking at us saying, oh my God, they look so much alike. How are we possibly going to tell them apart? So we're talking about how you can transform your knowledge management initiatives with Office 365. And when Dan asked me if I would do this topic with him, I said to him, not if you make me say that knowledge management issues or challenges can be solved with technology. You can't make me come up and say that because I've been responsible for knowledge management initiatives, and I know that it's not just technology, that technology has to enable it. And Dan said, okay, well, that's fine. So I'm basically, when you think about me, since you're going to have difficulty telling us apart, I want you to think of me as the bread. So if I'm the bread, I'm going to put the wrapper around the technology that Dan is going to demo.
So that makes me the meat?
No, Dan, I actually think that makes you the bologna. Or possibly the cheese. And so with that, I hope we have made you hungry for what we have to talk about today. So here's the deal. When you talk about knowledge management, one of the first issues that you have in organizations is defining just what the heck you're talking about. If you put 100 consultants in a room, how many of you are consultants? Okay. If I asked half of you to define knowledge management, well, half of you, if I asked you to define knowledge management, half of you would give me two words, it depends, and the other half of you would give me 100,000 definitions. And so I'm just going to throw this up on the screen. Go back.
Sorry. I thought you were giving me the signal.
No. Well, I'm going to throw this up on the screen. Here's a definition from Tom Davenport, who is generally considered one of the fathers of knowledge management. I don't really want to get into definitions, but really the point about when we talk about what we mean by this knowledge management thing, what we're really talking about is figuring out how to take advantage of the knowledge inside our organization, which means we got to get it, we have to distribute it, and we have to figure out how to use it, or really better, reuse it. The way we think about knowledge management, the way we talk about it, really has a lot of impact on how we execute it. But when I think about knowledge management, what I think is the most important thing is to talk about the business outcomes that knowledge management can enable. And here's a list of some of the shared outcomes that you can all probably relate to. And so I would prefer to stay out of the definition wars and focus instead on the business problems that knowledge management can solve in our organization. Things like making sure we take advantage of the knowledge that we have, to make sure that we're not reinventing the wheel. Or in my organization where I used to work, we used to say that our consultants would be perfectly happy breaking down walls even if there's a perfectly good door. And so you just can't sustain a business when you're always breaking down walls when there's doors that are there already. And if you just walk through that door, you have a much better shot on innovating on top of the door rather than reinventing that door to begin with. So what we really want to do is deliver the knowledge that we have in our organization to people in a format that they can deal with just when they need it on whatever device they happen to be using. And that's where technology comes in. So we want to make sure that our technology will enable that. And so let's talk a little bit about how we want to think about the kind of things we're delivering. So you've probably, if anyone is in the knowledge management space, you've probably heard of this analogy before. And so we often talk about the knowledge and information in our organization like an iceberg. And what you see above the waterline, the tip of the iceberg, that's data and information. And we can't really do much with data and information alone. A human being has to look at that data information and information and do something with it in order to make a decision, in order to change the way they work, in order to empower a business process. So unfortunately for us, technology is pretty good at bringing us information, but where it's much, much harder is to get at what's below the waterline, and that's where knowledge fits in. So knowledge, information doesn't transform into knowledge until a human being takes action on it. And so what we really have to do is discover that knowledge to make it more actionable. And the challenge with all of this is that the water in which the entire iceberg floats is critically important to making this happen. And what that, let's think of the water as the organizational culture. And no matter how many knowledge management initiatives that you do or create or establish, and no matter how much technology you bring to bear, culture eats strategy for breakfast and lunch and dinner. And if your organization has a culture that rewards what you know rather than what you share, all of this is going to be much harder to implement or to get value from. And so what we want to think about is, can we use technology to help change or move the culture? Can we make it easier for people to share so that we get a shot at solving these business problems? And so I want to sort of again show you some a great quote from a friend of mine, Stan Garfield, who just retired from Deloitte. And what Stan likes to say is that knowledge management doesn't happen until somebody reuses something. Dan has a spin on that. He likes to say that knowledge management doesn't matter until someone reuses something. And what we're really trying to do is get our technology so that we can facilitate reuse. And that's ultimately what we want to do. And in order to have the ability to reuse what we know, we have to get stuff in to our technology to begin with. And so one of the things we like to think about is that there's more than one way to have to exchange knowledge at work. And we want to think about how can technology enable all of those ways. So can we go to the next slide? So when we work together, knowledge exchange happens in two ways. It happens formally and it happens informally. And so when we think about when we collaborate formally, you want to go to the next slide, your context and structure, if you could, there we go, is pretty well defined. You're on a project. You know the people that you're working with. You're working on a deliverable. So the expected outcome of this type of knowledge is typically written down. Your focus is reuse, of course, because you're coordinating and collaborating within your team to make sure that everybody has what they need to get their part of the project done. And managing this type of information works best with a formal taxonomy. That's why we like to use folders and metadata to organize the content on the projects that we work with. And so we can get to our reuse outcome for formal knowledge transfer with tools like SharePoint. So having a place to store the documents that we work on will help us do formal knowledge transfer. Informally, which is the other way that we collaborate, is a lot more social and undefined. And when we're collaborating informally, the goal is to discover and to make connections, to find who can help me solve a problem that I'm working on right now. So when that's our goal, when discovery and making connections is our goal, the way that we organize that content tends to be more loosely structured. Let's call it a shared folksonomy, if you will. Less formal, less structured, and to make that social collaboration happen, we want to empower our organization with tools like Yammer or Outlook Conversations, because conversation is where informal knowledge transfer takes place.
So as Sue's been talking about, in a knowledge transfer, knowledge management situation, we often have both formal and informal knowledge, what is often also called explicit and tacit knowledge. And those in the past have been really siloed, not only by the culture of organizations, but by technology as well. We would have knowledge bases or content management systems that would be focused on content, on that hard-coded, structured, taxonomically driven knowledge. We would have knowledge about people stored in an HR system at best. And we would have conversations happening at the water cooler, and if they were captured at all, they were in completely separate messaging applications. And so these three types, these three containers of knowledge were completely disconnected from each other. What's happening now, and you're in the middle of the transition here at Ignite 2016, is those three silos of content, those three silos of knowledge are really coming together into a comprehensive knowledge solution in Office 365. And they're founded on very well-respected, well-known brands, Office Delve, SharePoint, Yammer, and Outlook. And now they're being pulled together into a common fabric in Office 365 that allows you to collaborate and share knowledge across those different collaboration experiences and across those different applications with which people share knowledge. Underneath all of these, or pulling them all together, we'll see is SharePoint. It gives you a customizable hub for a group, a team, a community, where you can centralize focus and give people access to resources, connect them with people, with content, and even where necessary, with applications and processes that drive knowledge management forward. And underneath all of this is a common fabric of groups where you can define who belongs to a team, a department, a community. Microsoft Graph, that powers the intelligence and discovery of information and makes that knowledge management, or sorry, the knowledge transfer more frictionless. And the underlying security infrastructure that allows you to control the distribution of knowledge so that you can make knowledge as open as possible with the confidence that knowledge that needs to be restricted can be and will be restricted. As Sue mentioned, though, it's not all about technology. It really has to do with the goals of the technology. So before we go into each of those technologies in a demo scenario, let's talk about some of the outcomes.
So, you know, in the ultimate world, the way we would do knowledge management would be more or less like the Vulcan mind meld. And so all of that stuff that we need to transfer to each other would just automatically happen. And the most important thing I want to think about when it comes to knowledge management in the organizations that I work with is looking at business goals. Rather than talking about, oh my gosh, we need to do knowledge management, what we really ought to talk about is what are those key areas of pain in our organization, and what can we do to address those areas of pain? And we've identified about 8 different shared common areas of pain that many, many organizations have. We talked about reuse, wanting to have sort of predictable outcomes for the projects that we work on. In order to get predictable outcomes, we have to share experiences. And we have to bring people who are joining the organization up to speed as quickly as possible. I call that metric the time to talent. And what we're really trying to do is make people who join as productive as people who have been around the organization for a really long time. And one of the primary differences between the new starter and the person who's been at the organization a really long time is a network of people. And what we really want to do is figure out, can we bring that network of people to everyone inside the organization so that we can get to some of these really, really critical business goals? So the technologies that we're going to work with really have to enable these critical business goals. And we've identified a series of about 9 things that we really, really want our technology to be able to do in order to get to these business goals. And rather than blabbing about all of these technologies, we are going to hopefully, and I use the word optimistically, hopefully show you a demo of how you can use Office 365 in its current and soon-to-be future state to help enable your knowledge management outcomes and power those key business goals that you're trying to get to. So, Dan?
Exactly. And as Sue mentioned, what I'm going to be showing you are the technologies of Office 365 and how they fit together to facilitate knowledge management and knowledge transfer. As Sue mentioned, that's only a small piece of the picture, though. There has to be a culture that matches the use of the technology. And so we'll see there's various experiences in Office 365 that align with different ways of working. Within an organization, or between organizations, I should say, some organizations prefer to work in more structured ways, others are less structured, but even within a single organization, you'll find certain scenarios where people need to work together and share knowledge in a less structured way, and other scenarios where it's in a more structured way. So we'll see there's a variety of technologies that we can put together to achieve these sort of 9 pillars of technological support for knowledge management. And as Sue mentioned, what I'm going to be showing you are live bits. Everything you're seeing is live. That does not mean it's all in every single one of your tenants right now. Some of these things are flighting currently. If you're in first release, you will be seeing some of these things already. Others will be coming out in the very, very near future. But what you're seeing is a very near-term way of structuring knowledge management and supporting it with Office 365. The first pillar is management of membership, defining who makes up a team, a department, a group, a community. And in Office 365, that's done with Office 365 groups. And Office 365 groups can be created from several places: Outlook Web Access, Outlook itself, Yammer, and Azure Active Directory, and the Office 365 Administration Center. So groups can be created from a number of places. If, for example, I'm in Outlook Web Access, I down here at the down here on the left-hand pane have the ability to create a new group. So let's say I'm interested in creating a group to share information about Atlanta here in at Ignite. I can go ahead and click New. All right, we'll try. There we go. That was user error. I'm gun shy right now after network problems earlier. So I'm going to go ahead and create a group called Atlanta. And I have the ability of setting the visibility of the group, whether it is a public or private group. Office 365 groups that are public have content that is completely visible to everyone. Conversations, files, et cetera, would be fully visible. So if you're trying to create a community or a team that's working out loud, where the value of working in the open is really driving the requirements, a public group is a good place to start. If, however, you want to keep content contained to the group itself, that's what a private group is for. Now, a private group will still be visible in name. Someone can see that the group exists, but they won't be able to see the contents of the group or the conversations unless they've been added as an administrator. So I'm going to go ahead and create this as a public group initially and click Create, and we'll go ahead and let that group create.
They don't have to be added as an administrator. They have to be added as a member, right, to the group?
They have to be added by an administrator. Sorry if I said in as, that's different. Yeah, an administrator would have to add someone if it were a private group. So I'm going to go ahead and add Sue to this group, and we'll add Sue's boss, Katie. And so we've got a couple of members, and because this was a public group, other users will be able to discover that group and join themselves as well. Now, that group is really a membership construct. It's all about defining who is part of that particular group, team, department, or community. And that group can include external users as well. So let's say that I decide I've got someone from a partner, a vendor, or a customer who needs to belong to this group as well. I can go ahead and click Add Members, and I can add anyone. So I might add this person named Daniel Holm at Gmail. And so obviously not even an Office 365 account, completely external account. I can go ahead and add that user to the group as well. And external users in Office 365 groups is in first release now. So some of you will already be able to start seeing this functionality. And that user will then get an invitation with a link to the group and will be included in the group just as a first-class member of that group. So we've got public and private groups. We've got the ability to add external users. Some other things that are worth noting is that groups can also be defined dynamically, meaning you could, with Azure Active Directory, say that this group contains anyone whose office location property in Active Directory equals Atlanta. It could be a dynamically driven membership so that when someone's profile attributes or Active Directory attributes change, they become a part of the group automatically. Now, this group then enables the users in the group to access a shared set of content and services across Office 365. We can see some of them listed up here in the top navigation. So the group has conversations, which we'll be talking about in a moment, files. It has a shared calendar, so it can keep track of deadlines and such. It has a notebook where the team can collect information and take notes in meetings and work with in a very unstructured way to just collect thoughts. It has a planner, or a plan specifically, in Planner, in order to manage tasks. And it has a modern SharePoint site. So if we go to click Site, we'll see the beginnings. Actually, it takes us into the document library, but that document library is inside the SharePoint site, which at this point is empty, and we'll see a fully fledged one in just a moment. So the group creates the membership construct. It can include internal and external people. It can be public, out in the open in your organization, or it can be private. Now let's turn our attention to the SharePoint team site in a little bit more detail. And I'm going to do that using a group that has already been created, so it's a little bit more interesting. And while I do that, I'll point out that the SharePoint tile in Office 365 takes you to the SharePoint home that gives you an overview of all the sites and groups that are important to you in your day-to-day work. You can see groups and sites that you've explicitly chosen to follow, that you've recently visited, and links to places that your corporate IT organization or corporate communications department thinks is important. And you can get an overview of activity in the cards at SharePoint Home. I'm going to jump into one of my groups that was already created as a sample before the session began so that we can see a fully populated team site. And this team site is available for the group as a place to connect the group with resources it needs to be successful and to share knowledge. Those resources might be files, they might be lists, they might be pages, they might be OneNote notebooks. Any number of things can go onto this particular site. So just really briefly, I demonstrated this in detail yesterday. We've got news that we can create pages with in order to communicate ideas that could include embedded documents, text, images, multimedia, and just about anything else under the sun. We've got the ability to use quick links to put resources right on the homepage of the team site that we know this group really needs. And at the bottom, we see an activity view that gives me a focus view of activity for this group so that I can quickly find out what's been going on and I can stay in the know.
Dan, can I ask a question?
Sure, of course you can, Sue.
So you've made it pretty clear, something that I think has been really confusing for a lot of people, is that a group is actually what you think it is. It's a group of people, right? And the team site is where the group comes to work. But Dan, we have this concept of SharePoint groups. And how does the things that we all know and love, visitors, members, and owners, how does that relate to the concept of a group?
That's a great question. So right now, what I've been talking about is a scenario where we started a group from scratch with an Office 365 group. And Office 365 groups now have SharePoint sites by default. We'll come back and answer your question in just a moment. I gave you a demonstration of how it looks from within Outlook. On the web, you can also create a group from Outlook, the rich client. But it's also important to note that you can create groups in several other ways, including from Yammer. Later on this year, you're going to be able to create a Yammer group that is, in fact, an Office 365 group. In the past, Yammer groups were their own construct, which meant if you were trying to manage knowledge, you had the silo where you had to define people over here for SharePoint and over here for Yammer. Yammer's now coming to the party, so to speak, and is connecting to the service, the membership service, you might call it, of Office 365 groups. So that leaves traditional SharePoint sites as the question mark, as Sue just mentioned. Traditional SharePoint sites had contributors, members, and visitors. They had owners, members, and visitors that had full control permission, contribute or edit permission, and read permission, respectively. Later on this year, those existing SharePoint sites will get Office 365 groups. We've not yet finished the planning for that to say exactly how that's going to work, so I'm not going to make any speculation, but there will be the ability to take an existing SharePoint site and infuse it with the power of Office 365 groups to attach it, so to speak. The details are TBD. In the meantime, there's a really great option that you've got even in your existing environment, so let me show you what that is.
Come on, you guys had that same question, didn't you? Okay.
All right. Let's go to an existing team site. That's sales and marketing. Okay. So this is an existing team site, a sort of classic SharePoint team site. I'm going to go to site contents and site permissions and people in groups. Or sorry, not site contents, site settings. And people in groups. And we see those classic SharePoint groups, owners, members, and visitors. And one of the options you've got, now right now we're looking at the members group of this, is we've got the ability to put a group as a member of the members group. So we can nest groups. You do that by clicking new and then clicking, you would guess that it would say groups, but no, it says users. Even though it says add users, you can also add groups. And the groups you add here could be an Active Directory group. So you might have an Active Directory group called Sales, for example, and if you did, you could add it. You can also add an Office 365 group. So this is, for example, and this is not a great scenario here, but we could add our loyalty program Office 365 group as a member of the members group of the SharePoint site. And what that does is it gives us the equivalent of what we've been talking about, where you now are defining membership in one place, that's the Office 365 group, that already has a plan and a conversation and a calendar, and you're just letting the same people have access to at a certain level to your classic SharePoint sites. So you can sort of beat us to the punch, so to speak, if you want to get ahead of the train. Do watch what we end up doing when we roll out the feature that we internally call Sites Get Groups. When we roll out Sites Get Groups, you'll want to pay attention to how we're doing it and look at whether it aligns with what you've done, if you want to make any modifications, et cetera.
So temporarily, the SharePoint team site, or we'll call them the classic team site, could be the super site for small work teams. And so we could establish something that way. We could have sort of a parent portfolio of teams.
You could.
And that would be our team site. And then individual work teams would get their own group. So if we wanted to take advantage of all this modern goodness, we could do that. Or we could actually still live in our traditional SharePoint team site mode and still get all the rich sort of new document library, new list capabilities.
And if you're really jonesing to get the new stuff fast, your other alternative is to create an Office 365 group, get a new site, and migrate your stuff from the classic site into the modern site. Depending on how sophisticated your classic team site is, that could actually be really easy. In some situations, it might be worth waiting.
Michelle.
Good question. So she's asking, her question is it a new team site or a site collection? And that's a good distinction to make. Architecturally speaking, every new site, when you create a new site in Office 365, from the admin center or from the sites page or the SharePoint home, is a site collection. And we use, the terms are used sloppily but interchangeably. But the thing to know is that architecturally, a site collection is a unit of work. It is a definition of collaboration. And in Office 365, even last year when we introduced groups, every group was its own site collection, which then allows full governance of that independent of other groups and sites in the organization. So you're creating a site collection. You'll often hear it called a site. The object model actually calls it an SP site, just to make it really confusing. And one of the things that you definitely want to keep track of for your on-premises environments and the cloud is that you really want to have a lot of site collections. If you have a lot of site collections, you're probably doing it right, because it means that you've defined each unit of work, each team, each project, each department, each function as its own site collection. So for example, at Microsoft, we have a site that is actually a site collection that was started as a group called Ignite 2016 SharePoint. And I belong to that. I also belong to the Future of SharePoint site, which we used for our May 4th event. I belong to the one that's coming up for the MVP Summit. I belong to the one that comes up for the Envision event in February. So I belong as a user to lots of different teams doing lots of different things. Architecturally, they're each a site collection. But the nice thing is your users don't have to care, because they just go to SharePoint Home, they see sites, which are site collections, and they just go to work. So they don't have to think about that. But that's what's happening. So did that?
Yeah, but does that mean that the person
Yes, that's true. So her follow-on question is, if someone creates a group in the new, let's say from Outlook or from Yammer with the new groups, they are in fact the site collection administrator of the site they're creating. Just as is the case already, has been the case in Office 365. If you went to the sites page and clicked new, which most people didn't because it was so hard to find, they didn't even see it. I didn't see it for a year. If they went there and clicked it, they were the site collection administrator of the site they created. Now, we do have ways of allowing you as an administrator to control that. So depending on what you're trying to control, you can prevent the creation of sites. There's a setting in the Office 365 Admin Center for that. There's all kinds of governance wrapped around groups that you can just use to decide who's allowed to create a group, et cetera. And then there's also scripting and third-party tools you can implement if, for example, you want to let people create groups, but then you don't want them to be a site collection administrator. So you do definitely want to think about how open and collaborative you want the environment to be. By default, it is quite open. By default, we want users to be able to collaborate frictionlessly because that's what they're asking us for. Now, the IT organization wants controls, and so we give the IT organization controls as well, but the default is that it's as frictionless as possible because we know from what we see that if IT locks it down too tight, users go around IT. They start emailing documents to their personal email accounts, not a good thing. They start using Dropbox or Box or one of the other services that are out there to share files. And we want to make sure that we're giving organizations the best path to success of allowing users to be as flexible and agile as they want to be while having a service that's integrated and has the security underneath it.
So I'm just going to share my thoughts on this. This is really hard to manage. And from a governance perspective, Michelle, I hope you're asking it from this perspective. You know, one of the challenges with having 4,000 site collection administrators is that's 4,000 people with superpowers that they do not know how to use. And figuring out how to govern an environment and train up 4,000 people with superpowers they do not know how to use is a massive challenge. And if you want to have your knowledge transfer and knowledge management outcomes be successful, you need some shared attributes. You want some common structures. You don't want every single team to look differently so that every time I land on a team site, I got to figure out what company am I working for and how does this group organize. So it just because you can doesn't mean you should or that you have to take advantage of everything that is in the art of the possible. And so it's very likely that you're going to want to establish some kind of, I'll just tell you what I think you should be doing, is sort of business unit level or scoped governance so that you're not randomly allowing anyone and their brother to create a group, but you've got a broader collection of super administrators who can make sure that the group is necessary, that the person who's going to now have superpowers in the group has had training to go along with those superpowers, and that otherwise we're not letting them be the administrator of a group because that makes a sharp edge where your knowledge, your information, and your critical documents can get hurt or lost or confused or, God forbid, duplicated.
Yeah, and Sue just made a really good point in the middle of that, which is the group even necessary? One of the most interesting things you find, and we've all seen this in our organizations, is someone, you know, says, oh, I'm going to go create a group called, United Mileage Plus, and they think that that's a whole new thing instead of knowing there's a loyalty program group already there. And having that human being in the middle or having some technology that surfaces these things faster really does help with that. Now, one of the other points, and for those of you who've seen me at PASS Ignites, you know I've done tons of governance presentations, often with Sue. One of the other things to know about the whole governance and site collection administrator issues that these questions center around is that we at Microsoft are very aware of the challenge you're facing. And we're trying at the same time to make the power you have as a site collection administrator, less necessary, B, easier to exercise correctly, and C, more difficult to exercise incorrectly. So let me show you a couple examples of where you'll see that. Later on this year, you're going to get the ability to create a new SharePoint site connected to an Office 365 group. So that's yet another scenario where you're now creating a site and a group at the same time from the SharePoint angle rather than from Outlook or from Yammer or from Azure Active Directory. So when you create a site, you're going to get a provisioning engine that lets you say, okay, I want to create a site for Ignite 2016. It's available. I can choose public or private. And one of the things we're doing to sort of help along the way is let you pick an information classification. So I, as a business user, have this ability to create a site and a group. I can at least make an intelligent decision about is it confidential, and I'll know that. And I won't lie because my job will be at a risk if I say, this confidential information is actually general purpose. We find from our research and our internal experience as well that if you ask people questions that they don't want to lie about, they will tell the truth. And one of them is, you're creating a group, tell me what you're going to put in it. And that's something that's easily trackable later. So this is one of those things that we're doing to help, is this creates a set of guidance as far as what the information in this particular group will be. There's even a link to a page that gives you more details on the specific levels of information classification, and all of this is completely customizable. So you're gonna be able to pick your labels, you're gonna be able to customize the page that people go to, And when you're all done and you end up with a team site like our loyalty program, go back to that real quick, you will see in the header of that site, it's a public group and it's, in this case, a general purpose group. So that guidance is right there in front of users. And Navjot talked yesterday in Jeff Tepper's presentation about how this helps your security posture by at least reminding users of the purpose of a group. Now, you can guess, and you would be right, that our intention is to make it more than just guidance. Our intention is to allow you to attach policies to these classifications. That is the direction we're heading. I can't tell you exactly when, but it won't be long.
So just as much as we want to be able to share and let information flow across organizational boundaries inside the organization, we also want to make sure that our critical knowledge isn't leaking to places where it shouldn't be leaking. So this would allow us to, say, have a policy on a confidential group that would make sure that no matter what we give people permissions to do inside the group, they can't take anything with them when they leave or share it outside.
That's absolutely right. And there's all kinds of information policies that you can apply already that lets you control where how people access information, whether it's only on a computer, whether it's only on a managed device that's owned by the company, or whether it's an unmanaged device by the person. They can only get to it from the corporate network, not from a cafe. There's all kinds of things you can do to wrap governance around it. And we're making even things like sharing, we're in the process of making easier. You'll see the first step of that here on the right-hand pane, where now, just by selecting a file, I can see who has permission to the file, I can add people, I can stop sharing with one click. Those kinds of things used to be lots and lots of clicks through classic interfaces that were tough for users. And you're gonna see a lot more situations where we know the kinds of things that users who are site collection administrators really need to do on a day-to-day basis, and we're gonna make that as easy as possible so that they're not having to go into site settings where they might stumble into places that that they don't need to be. So that was a long talk around that. We sort of digressed. But so let's pull ourselves back to the concept of groups. We've talked about groups real quickly, public or private. They can contain internal or external members. You can classify the information in those sites. They get a team site that allows them to connect with the information they need for that particular group of people to share knowledge. The one thing we didn't talk about in the team sites, we'll come back to in a moment, which is document libraries is there. The one real thing that you have to think about as you create a community or a group in Office 365 is how do they want to have conversations. The structured knowledge we'll get to in a moment, but that informal knowledge that is shared by communicating is really important to think about how your users are going to want to behave in this specific use case that you're trying to support. Because you have two broad options. One is the Outlook conversation. And this particular site has an Outlook conversation behind it, so let's jump to it. Most of you have probably seen this, but if you haven't, I'll cover it real quickly and cover some of the key value points of this so you can communicate these to your users. An Outlook conversation is like a shared inbox and a distribution list hooked up on Tinder and had a love child. It is the best of all possible worlds where people can come together and have conversations in a way that has a nice user interface and the joy of persistence over time. So what we see here is we see a set of conversations, and I can create a new conversation right up the top and say, how big is Ignite? Big is the GWCC in Atlanta. I can send that conversation to the group. And this conversation then allows people to respond to it. So if I'm over here as Sue in the same group, am I you? I'm you. And the loyalty program. Sue now goes into the conversation and can reply. It's ginormous. And we can see that the way that conversation is rendered is really, really friendly. You don't have that traditional email where you have the embedded old responses in the same message. You just have a nice flow of what the message stream has been. The same experience exists within Outlook itself. So if I go to the loyalty program here in Outlook, just a second. When I go to the loyalty program here in Outlook, we can see the discussion, how big is the GWCC. It's a beautiful rendering. I can see the person. I can see their availability. I can continue to reply to this stream. So it renders really nicely. People can live in Outlook. And let's think about what that means to your cultural change, since culture eats strategy for lunch. Users who like to live in Outlook are unlikely going to be the types of users who want to change immediately to something wholly different that is more socially. They might want to live in Outlook. And users are used to replying to messages in Outlook, right? So this is something that they can do very, very easily. They live in Outlook, they add a reply.
I call this keeping people in their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And if you really want to make people change their behavior, give them an opportunity to do it where they are and make it super, super easy for them to do. And all of this change and conversation, all of this knowledge that we want to transfer happens each and every day. It's happening in email, but email makes it very, very siloed. And having a conversation inside these broader communities allows you to sort of retain that knowledge, make it available to the entire community, not just to the two or three people on the message. I think we have a question.
Let me go a little bit further, and then I'll get the questions here. And one of the other great things about this is, if you think about the way many of us treat emails, when you get emails about particular topics or projects, you generally drag it into a folder, right? That's how most users organize their mail, in folders. Look at the way this presents itself in Outlook. I've got my inbox with the standard folders, and then I've got groups with each of my groups. And so the conversations are naturally already happening in a container. Users don't have to drag and drop them because it's just there. Now, these groups also have email addresses, so you can allow someone to send an email to loyaltyprogram@contoso.com if you want to. There's all kinds of additional extensions of this experience, but it solves the problem of cultural change because users live in Outlook. It solves the problem of email organization because it's already organized. And most importantly, to a point Sue made earlier, this is something that lasts over time. It's not siloed. So if you join this group 3 months from now, you're going to get the same thread of conversations. You're going to see what the group has done for its entire history instead of just being added to a DL that you start getting mail to from that point forward. So it's not siloed. It has history. It's a great user experience. I really am a huge fan of these group conversations because they're just easy. Now, there was a question.
You go first.
Once you have external users, once you have the real external user feature, which is rolling out currently, they will be full members of everything I'm talking about. They are guests in the Office 365 context, so they will have access to everything the group has access to. Now, one other point, though, about guests. One thing you can do with these conversations is if you create a conversation, either in Outlook, I might as well stick in Outlook, if I start a new conversation about lunch, for example, I can add someone from outside as a two member. So I might add Sue at Hanley.com, is it?
Susan Hanley.com.
Hanley.com. I can add an external user to a specific conversation, and they will be part of that conversation without being part of the group. So you can, just like you would an email, you have a project you're going, you've got to get input from someone outside, you can still do that. They won't be part of the group, but they'll be part of that thread. Super, super cool. There was another question over here, I think. Create a utility too. Well, so the question is, how do you keep track of all this, and how do you map it out, so to speak? You know, to be completely honest, there are still some things you're going to want to find ways to align with your own business needs. But do keep in mind that all of these are Office 365 groups. So at a bare minimum, you've got the ability to go to Office 365 Admin. Go into Groups. Oops.
I can tell you how one of my clients is doing it. They're not allowing people to create a group on their own. So they're turning it off completely. They're creating their own provisioning front door where you request what kind of activity you want to have. Do you have a team that wants to collaborate? Are you trying to create an extranet site for partnering with a customer or a partner or a supplier? They are asking the question, what kind of information do you want to keep here? Does it fall under our regulatory stuff? Is it highly confidential? What kind of conversations do you want to have? who's the member, who's going to be in charge of the group, who's sponsoring the group. From that, the admin team will provision the appropriate kind of site collection in the appropriate place. They're going to route, if you're from business unit A, they're going to route it to the business partner, the IT business partner for A, and say, hey, is there something like this already? Can we put this person inside of an existing group? So they're going to use some human beings and human knowledge to determine, do we actually need to solve for this request? And is this request actually answered by Office 365, or is what the person's really asking for is an application that we have to build? And so rather than trying to, I mean, it's great that we can do this, and there will be scenarios where we want to. There will be other cases, and this is kind of your mileage may vary, where for this particular client, they want to control some of this so that we can have some governance, and we don't have 10,000 site collections that are completely unmanaged. So they're going to have a front door that will allow them to have some input and management of the scope of the site collections.
Yep, that's very good advice. And all of this is completely accessible in Azure Active Directory. So we're looking at the properties of a group, including its description, for example. And you can drive these with PowerShell. Yeah, obviously, you can use the UI. But you can also use PowerShell. You can use any sort of development framework you want to. And I'm a big fan of this sort of middleman or proxy, as I call it, as well. I've done that at most of my clients. And it can be as simple as a SharePoint list that people go to and fill in a form, fill in an item, that has all the data points you need to map out your use in your organization. And then PowerShell can actually connect to that list and see that a group hasn't been created yet, but that it's been approved. Go create it, mark it approved in the list, and you're done. It's a very short PowerShell script, and it's not hard to create. And obviously, this is the kind of scenario we are also going to try to address in cleaner and cleaner ways as we take this journey together. But right now, you've got all the metadata you need in the UI. It's exposed in the Microsoft Graph, so you can get to it through PowerShell and other frameworks as well. No, because there is no map to groups. They're all flat. They're peers. Any mapping is completely your own invention. If you nest Active Directory groups into SharePoint groups, you've created a link that's a hierarchy then. And you can create a navigational structure that reflects whatever you want. So you could create a portal that has multi-levels of links. But in the end, each of the destinations of those links are a group. They're a flat set of containers from an architectural perspective.
And actually, I'm an information architect. I always tell people you really do want your physical structures to be as flat as possible. And what you want to create is your navigational front door. The hierarchy can be defined as some, because the only thing that I know is going to change is that the organization is going to change.
Yes.
And so if I start nesting, I have a client, one client has travel that lives under finance, and the other one has travel that lives under HR. If I'm new to the organization, I have absolutely no clue how to find information about travel. So they really, and then they're going to probably reorg, and the one that's under finance is now going to be under, operations. So what we really want to do is have all of our sites, even pre-groups, as flat as possible, and use our navigational architecture, the way we string things together in our visual IA, to create that front door.
Yep. We need to keep going just because we've only made it to the first pillar here. We need to get a little bit further. But I'll be happy to answer your questions if we've got time at the end. And then after the session, I think we have lunch. So we've got time. So let's talk about the structured knowledge here. Well, actually, we didn't even finish the unstructured. So we talked about group conversations in Outlook. The other type of conversation is in Yammer. So Yammer has obviously been around for a while. It's a great sort of, you might call it 21st century millennial way of conversing. It's a more enterprise social type of network where the conversations happen out loud. They're multi-threaded. It supports rich sharing. And Yammer's been a great tool for communication in many, many, many clients, including at Microsoft. The way we use it is actually, to me, quite impressive.
I think, you know, from a knowledge management perspective, Yammer is the ideal tool for a community of practice, which is topic-focused, not organizationally focused. So I told you I was going to have to sort of introduce the people things, not the technology things. Communities exist even before there is technology. But try collaborating in a community that is cross-functional, geographically dispersed, and has people all over the place. You're going to need some kind of technology. And a democratic technology like Yammer is really perfect for communities of practice.
Absolutely. And now, later this year, when you create a Yammer group that will be connected to an Office 365 group, you will get a SharePoint site as well. So we see one here. This is our fashion trends group at Contoso Clothing. And if I click SharePoint site, we can see that it now has a SharePoint site and all the goodness of SharePoint sites, files, documents, pages, etc. And so we've got the ability to work with the full power of SharePoint behind the scenes on the structured communication and the full power of Yammer up front with the conversation. And one of the cool things about Yammer conversations is, again, you might belong to a lot of groups. I do here as well. When you start on your home view in Yammer, you will be seeing conversations across all the groups that you belong to. So it surfaces all those conversations, so your teams are, quote unquote, working out loud. You see all the things that are going on that you need to. You can catch up, you can share, and you can process that information. There's also all kinds of great social gestures. So if, for example, I need to find someone who knows something about loyalty programs in Contoso, so I'm inventing this on my own, but maybe there's someone who already has done this, I can ask, you know, who has worked on a loyalty program before? And we actually have this happen all the time at Microsoft, where as a big company, you don't necessarily know what's available or how to get to it easily. And we use our all-company network for that kind of thing all the time. Because then some other user will be out there and will have an answer for you. So for example, let's jump into as Sue here, and let's look at the all-company view. And Sue actually says, hey, I have.
So here's what's really cool about this. So maybe Dan could have tried searching his entire intranet to find this content. And what he's really doing is he's using people to put quality on search. So search for the person gets you to the document, and instead of emailing you the document, shares it with you via a link so that you now have access to that document. So it's sort of people-supplemented search. So instead of having to look at pages and pages of marketing programs that other departments have created, he's going to get to the one that the human, in this case me, has interpreted, oh my God, I've worked on something exactly like what you need. I'm not going to make you sift through 17,000 other ones. I'll link you to the one that I think is exactly what you're looking for. Time saved, business value generated. Let's say I had a customer on the other end of the phone call. Answer solved, first call. There's all kinds of business outcomes that we've just enabled with a very simple conversation backed by all kinds of content that we now actually had to encourage everyone to contribute. But you know, we need to drive people to the conversations by giving them a reason to be there, by telling them stories about what outcomes they're going to be able to achieve by changing the way they work. That's how the technology can help make those incremental changes in the culture so that we can take advantage of all these great things.
And this ability to have conversations bubble up is one of the really key strengths of Yammer. If you compare that to what we saw in Outlook groups, remember the Outlook conversation is bounded to the group. It doesn't necessarily surface. There's no all-company Outlook group, but there is the equivalent in Yammer. So it's got a really nice capability. And we do need to keep moving here for a bit. Now, the other type of knowledge is the structured knowledge. And SharePoint obviously has a long history in that. I'm going to cover it pretty quickly because I think most of you know this. I'm just going to hit a couple of the key new investments that hopefully will help you deal with information even more easily. And in this case, we're going to jump into a different group, which is a group that's working on articles that we'll post on our website. We see here a standard document library here. Let me go ahead and change this for a second here because we'll come back and do this. And when you have a lot of files, you want to be able to manage them effectively, you use metadata. And of course, metadata is a key piece of knowledge management for structured data. So we can create columns, and look how easy it is to create a column now. Just click plus, and I can create a column of any type. Once I've got the column, I can, of course, use those columns to sort. So I can sort by publish date, for example. I can group, so I can find out, hey, what has Sue actually written for us lately? and group into that. And I can sort by a metadata column like the channel that we want to publish an article to. What audience does it go to? Now, as you know, one thing that has typically plagued metadata scenarios is users don't like filling out metadata. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible to fill out metadata. So for example, we could take this Wedding Day Wonderful article and we can change its metadata without really having to even open up a separate web page. The information panel on the right lets us go in and change that the channel for that particular document just that easily. I don't even have to click save, it's saved automatically. By the way, notice I can see the activity on that file, so I can see how popular that document has been. And that's really nice on its own, but even better, the metadata columns themselves, the groupings, allow you to drag and drop items between groups. So we've got this article that perhaps was miscategorized for Wedding Day Wonderful. If I want to change, let me refresh the page actually, make sure I've got that correct. What did we change it to? I already forgot. Here it is down here, fashion industry. If I realize it really should be under global fashion, I can simply drag and drop it into the global fashion group, and it changes the metadata on the column that easily. And you're gonna see more and more things like that. Yeah, that's actually a small thing. You can applaud if you want. Another thing that I know is, Sue, I'll let you say it because I know it's your favorite.
Okay, so my absolutely favorite thing here is less, you know, have you ever had a large collection of documents and there's one or two that are really important and you want to make sure people see them first? So one way people do that is they name the document dot dot or underscore underscore so that sorts to the top. The other thing that they do is they add a column, sort order, and then you forget that the minute you get to 10 in your sort, you forgot to put the leading zeros on. So it's a super pain in the neck. So I love this particular feature. It is so little but so important. There's that one or two documents that define the structure of the entire library. And this feature I love, pin to top. You can sort of say, this document is the one that drives this. Now, from a governance perspective, what I really want to pin to the top is, here's how I want you to work in this library. Here's what I want you to know about this. And guess what? Not only can I pin a document to the top, but I can pin a link to my file naming conventions, which lives someplace else in my governance site. And so I can make sure that people have information about how they can work most effectively in this context right inside every document library.
And if it's important enough to drive the entire team, not just within the library, we've got this similar capability on the homepage of the team site with quick links. So you can add a link to any information that's contained in the site and have it visible on the homepage. So we've got several great ways of surfacing information. So metadata is great. Obviously, we all know it's important for knowledge management. We're trying to make it easier and easier to work with. It's also another type of classification is the more informal classification that happens in Yammer when you start using things like hashtags. So for example, we notice that the GWCC is mighty cold. We need some hashtag conference fashions. And I can create a hashtag that then will be something that can be searched for and used in the future within Yammer. Now, one of the key things, I know Sue likes to say this, so I'll say this one. A hashtag is only useful if multiple people agree it's useful. And one of the great things to do when you're establishing a community is to establish rules about what the hashtags are that your group is going to use so that people center around specific hashtags. That can be a page on your team site. Maybe you go create a page that lists some of the common rules for how the team is going to work, including its hashtags, its preferred applications, et cetera.
But pin it to the top.
Pin it to the top, exactly. But hashtags are a great way to classify information. And just as a note from my own work, I use hashtags pervasively in everything I do. Whenever I remember, I add it to the bottom of an email. I add it to pages in OneNote so that I can then get to that information much more quickly in the future. And if you think about a OneNote notebook where your team is pulling information together in a very unstructured way, if you've agreed to hashtag things with certain hashtags, that then makes finding each other's work in a notebook much, much easier. Because I certainly find, especially in a big, busy notebook, people don't always put things in the right section, they create duplicate sections and duplicate pages, and if you're at least using shared hashtags, it allows you to bubble up that information very easily. All right. And what we're talking about here now is search. One of the next pillar is making things findable in Office 365. Hashtags are one way to do that. And of course, we have a long history of search. From the SharePoint home, that's one place you can search. So if I'm looking for information about our loyalty program, I can start searching. I see some quick results. Notice how fast those came up. A lot of information is stored in Microsoft Graph, which is in RAM. And so these come up really fast. If it's not exactly what I'm looking for, I can go in and do a more traditional search for loyalty. And I can see people who are affiliated with loyalty, as well as files and sites. And search is great if you know that there's something you're actually looking for. But what's even more valuable, and it's key to knowledge management, is bubbling up information in the context of work when someone doesn't even know that information is there. And it's suddenly valuable and relevant to them. And that's what Microsoft Graph is used for. Microsoft Graph is watching the content, the people, the behaviors, the organizational structure of your company, and building an understanding of what's important to who and who's important to who. And that then allows it to surface valuable content right in the context of your work. Let me show you a couple of places where you start to see that. First, in SharePoint Home, we see the activity feeds. Those are coming from Microsoft Graph. We see the activity feeds in the team sites that are coming from Microsoft Graph. We see them in OneDrive. So if I go into OneDrive, in the Discover view, this is actually going to be showing me files from across my organization that Microsoft Graph believes will be relevant and valuable to me based on who else is working on them and what's being done on them. Now, the important thing to know about Microsoft Graph is it will never surface information you don't have permission to. It's always a given that you're only seeing things that you have permission to. However, as your users start experiencing these discovery experiences, you have to help them understand that they will panic, because they will look at their view and they'll say, oh my God, my document is there, I don't want everyone else to see it. They don't realize it's there because they have access to it. And their friend next to them will not see it if they don't have access to it. So you've got to prepare users to understand what the graph is actually doing. But it's a phenomenal way to drive productivity in your organization.
But what it will do is it's totally going to expose failure to secure.
That's true.
So if you had been living with security by obscurity, forget it. It is all over. The salary spreadsheet is now on the copier. I mean, you are going to find it. So it's an opportunity, a teachable moment to help people understand how permissions work, which is why you don't want to give people superpowers that they don't know how to use.
Yeah, you'll definitely, we all went through that phase in the 5 years ago when enterprise search became big with SharePoint it started surfacing things that were indexed that hadn't been secured correctly. Now, as Sue mentioned, it's just going to bubble up and it's going to, those popular things will pop right up to the top. Delve was also released this week in GA for Windows. And this application is phenomenal. I have to say, I am a huge fan of actually starting my day in the new Delve application, because it shows me things that are happening around me and reminds me of work that my colleagues are doing that I might need to take a look at. It's also one of the best search experiences we have, because we can go in here and search for people or documents super, super easily. So let's say I'm looking for someone who has experience with loyalty programs. I can do a search. I can again see a quick set of results. And if I pull up all results here, they're nicely sorted by people, by documents, and I'm seeing, I'm able to connect with the information I need. Now, how exactly does it know that Sue has anything to do with loyalty? Well, it's because Sue is in the loyalty group, and the Microsoft Graph knows that. Or because Sue's profile has information about her skills and expertise, and perhaps that includes loyalty. So this takes us to the portion about finding people.
Does it also know that Sue's been writing content about loyalty?
It knows that Sue's been writing content about loyalty if the properties of that document include loyalty.
Okay.
If it's in the index.
So
if it's indexed content and associated with Sue, it will find it. Yes, absolutely.
So that's like content finding you without you having to find content.
That's absolutely right. That's sort of the catchphrase we use, is files find you instead of you finding files. And believe me, once you start using it, it's ridiculously cool. I can't tell you in my day-to-day job how many things pop up that I'm like, oh, I really need to pay attention to that for whatever reason. And maybe it's because, you know, Satya's been looking at it and wants us all to, or whatever. It's great. Now, all of this is relying on the new user profile in Office 365, which has been updated. And we can see here, this is my profile. One of the things that's new is the ability to see someone's availability. So if you want to connect with that person, you can get a quick look at that. That's pulling from the free busy information in Exchange. The editing experience for the profile is now immersive. So we have a lot of really great editing control so people can add information and a heavier emphasis on things like projects, skills and expertise, and interests. And all those things are indexed. So Sue, for example, has fluency in German in her profile down here as one of her skills, which means that if I'm ever in Delve and I'm looking for German, and I do a search, whoops, I didn't click. There we go. There's Sue, sure enough.
Are the values stored in the keywords list still in the management of data service?
That's a really good question. I do not believe they are at this point.
Okay.
I do not, but I won't say that with 100% certainty. We're doing lots to enhance the user profile, and the final place that comes in to really help you learn about who you're working with is right in the context of your work, for example, in a list or a library. If we go into a list here that we've got on our team site, and I see a submission from someone and I don't know who they are, I can hover over them and we get what's called a people card, which today seems to be broken, unfortunately. It's a new experience, it's still flighting. And this will actually show profile information, organizational relationships, and documents in a little nutshell. And we actually have a screenshot of it here that we can show in case of bad demo.
All right.
And I know we're running out of time because we had lots of really good questions. Okay, the next pillar was security and manageability. So we actually talked quite a bit about that. And there's tons of sessions here about security. Pay good, close attention to what we're doing in the category of conditional access policies. Many of us are familiar with securing information with permissions. You can read, you can edit. That's not enough these days because information isn't on devices the organization controls. If someone has information on a mobile device, you might want to be able to wipe it out. You might want to prevent them from being able to print it or forward it or even access it from a personal device, only let them access it from corporate devices. Those kinds of things all fall under the concept of conditional access, where beyond just the permission, it's a set of rules that say this device, this network location, this person, this time of day, those kinds of things all fall into that category, and those are the directions we're heading with that. Another key thing to help you secure and manage your environment is analytics and understanding what's popular and what's having impact in your environment. And you'll see analytics in several places. I'll show you a couple real quick here, including in the documents. We already saw that if you pick a document in the information panel, you will see an activity feed. So you'll see what's happened on that document. Oops, sorry.
Sorry.
Wait. There we go.
Yeah, there we go. That's
okay.
It.
You'll see the activity on the document. If you go into the site contents for your community or your group, you'll see site visits, you'll see trending content, and in OneDrive on iOS right now, you can pull up any file on your OneDrive app, and you can see the history of activity on that file, how many people have viewed it, et cetera.
So that actually is a really great way to look at personal knowledge management and sort of looking at what's the impact of my work. And so right now, if you have the iOS app, you can look at the impact of the documents that you've contributed from that application. And that's coming soon to other phones near you.
Absolutely. One of the key things about all the technical demos I've shown is we're really trying to create a cloud-first, mobile-first experience that expands all of your devices and applications. So if you see something that's really cool in OneDrive for iOS, the odds are almost 100% it's going to end up everywhere else as well. We're taking our features and building them in one place and then taking them to all the others. And analytics is a great transition to the topic of our last pillar, which is how do you know if you're successful?
All right, so maybe you have, like, my boss when I was running a knowledge management program who would come in and give me this look and the wah, 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 just like in Charlie Brown, basically saying to me, what have you done for me lately? All this money we're investing in knowledge management. How do I know if we're actually moving the needle? And I'm just going to share a few things. First of all, some of these key organizational objectives, you are not going to be able to measure success by looking at your Office 365 statistics. But you already are counting things. And if your knowledge management initiatives are not helping you drive and improve customer and employee satisfaction, which we know you're already measuring, then it's very likely that you're working on a sideshow project and not the main event. So if your investments in knowledge management are tied to the big rocks that your organization is working on, then you're already tracking some critical business performance measures that you should be impacting. But there are some really, really cool metrics that you can get from the system that can give you some really good proxies for how we're delivering value. And since we're running out of time, I'm not going to read through all of these, because what I did was write a little paper, 5 pages, that is going to be tweeted out probably right now, and I'll show you the URL for it, where we've looked at how do you know it, what metrics might be useful to saying, are we successful with our investments in knowledge management? Can I get them from Office 365, or do I need to go after a third-party friend? So I tracked down a bunch of third-party friends. I talked to Dan and his team at Microsoft, came up with what my dream measures of what would I really like to know. I want to know, for example, which documents are being viewed the most, because I want to recognize the people who contributed those documents, because that's a behavior that we want to acknowledge in our organization and make sure they're getting credit for exhibiting the knowledge-centric behaviors that we need to be successful with all this great technology. So I'm going to give you the URL for that paper in 2 seconds. So I just want you to remember that you can't command the knowledge out of people's heads. You have to create a culture in which you are recognizing and rewarding the behaviors that contribute to getting the most out of this great, amazing technology that we're delivering with Office 365. So you can't just have the technology without the process and the culture to go with it. And so we're going to give you a few ideas that you can take home right now and apply immediately.
And those start with the idea of creating some shared spaces for your groups, your departments, your teams, your communities. And if it's a group that's focused and relatively small and focused on deliverables, an Outlook group or a Yammer group can support it quite well. And it really is going to be a matter of preference as to which that particular group likes to use. If you're really talking about a cross-functional, cross-organizational community, Yammer is generally better suited for that. And keep in mind that Yammer will start creating Office 365 groups later this year. So that's not in place yet, but it will be coming very soon. Then take advantage of a SharePoint team site to connect that community to content that's important to them, so that information that's important doesn't just disappear down a stream of conversational threads, but rather stays front and center. Get your users used to using Delve and understanding the people and discovery experiences that are coming into Office 365. Delve and the people experiences is one of those things that you can start using almost the first day you connect to Office 365. As soon as you have Active Directory synchronizing and your profile attributes are in Azure Active Directory, Delve will start to light up and will start to provide value. And if you don't have good data in your Active Directory, there's actually some third parties who are releasing solutions to support and encourage the completion and the enrichment of profiles. Build a knowledge collection related to a topic across the organization. We didn't have time to demonstrate this, but Delve boards are a great way to collect information. Delve produces content, you can add it to a board. Conceptually, it's like a hashtag, and then that board can be shared across the team and across other teams as well. And then to Sue's paper, and I'll give her a piece of props here, this paper that she created is one of the most valuable things I've ever seen in the Office 365 Microsoft stack intersection with knowledge management. If you're in this room now, you're obviously interested in knowledge management. Do yourself a huge favor and download this tonight or when you get back to work on Monday, because it's amazing. Congratulations on it.
Thank you very much. Thanks
and,
for help.
And thank you for contributing to the community and making it available for everyone. That's amazing. So with that, we'll actually skip through the stock slides there. And thank you guys very much for coming. It is lunch, so we want to let you go. If you've got questions, feel free to come up and ask. We will stick around. Thank you very much and enjoy the rest of Ignite.
Thanks.